This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Brad Young sitting in today with, of course, as always, Ryan Wiggins and Brad Range. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Into our last hour. I don't know where the first 2 hours went, but we had a lot of fun, and we covered a lot of material. Before we dive into some more meaty material regarding special counsel Jack Smith is now seeking to dismiss the January 6th charges against President Trump. There was something interesting. We heard last week that Comcast, because their ratings are in the toilet, is now going to apparently be having a fire sale. And there was an interesting proposal being thrown out there about MSNBC.
Over the weekend, for example, Musk is joking, I think, about maybe trying to buy MSNBC. It seems he's just trying to troll. Comcast is not making MSNBC up for sale right now. Maybe something will change in a few years. But those tweets, those posts from Musk, those memes that he's posting, it just speaks to his power and his center of power throughout this incoming administration.
Well, the last time I checked, which was about 2 weeks ago, Musk's net worth was somewhere north of $350 billion. What I've seen reported is that MSNBC could be purchased for as little as $4 billion. So for Musk, number one, that's what we call beer money, okay?
Yeah, no kidding.
Number two, think about this. He could buy MSNBC and turn it into a news network.
Okay.
Well, hold on, though. But he could get MSNBC for a tenth of the price that he paid for Twitter.
If he does, let's say theoretically he's actually interested, because he's definitely poking the bear here.
Yeah.
You know, he and many others, I think Don Jr. was out there going, hey, man, hey, you looking at this? Hey. You going to buy it? And he's like, I don't know how much it costs. But because I saw the same thing this weekend. Let's say he does buy it. Because clearly that's on the table. That if MSNBC, if Comcast says, I could get money for this, yes, I will take money. They'll do it.
Yes.
And let's say he has that kind of money, liquid money, not just net worth money, but he could do it. What do you think he should do with MSNBC if he buys it? Because everybody will know that it happened. It's right. Not as if you could just kind of silently move it to the right. Or move it back to the center,
well,
even.
Like I said, first and foremost, I think he should turn it into a news network.
But
because it's not right now.
Wouldn't you be interested to see the part where he just goes, I'm just not going to touch this for a second? Because that's what I think he would do, or he should do, is just go, we're just going to leave this alone for a minute. Just see what happens.
Yeah, oh, good point.
What do the anchors do? Because they're not going to want to leave. And if they do, good for them. That means they were so principled that they, at the mere sight of a new boss, they said, I'm going to leave now. I can't do this, which they won't do.
But keep in mind, we know in the morning show that Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, that when they were enormously critical of Trump for the last 8 years, when they weren't trying to flirt with each other, when they were both married to somebody else. So whenever that happened, they were very hypercritical of Trump. And then last week, they went down to I think it was a week and a half ago, they went down to Mar-a-Lago, met with Trump, both of them did. And when they came back and mentioned on the air, the ratings all of a sudden dropped. Because people, the MSNBC, they reach out to that progressive crowd. And the progressive crowd didn't even want to watch the show, because the two of them met with President Trump. So if they're going to flee at someone just meeting President Trump, what would their ratings do if Musk left it all by itself as it is? I mean, the ratings would crater on that part alone.
Well, for a little bit, maybe a week or two. they could get some voyeuristic views of people just going, what are they saying? What are they going to do? Because I just, and I almost think he should have done this with Twitter, although he's clearly made Twitter successful. People are talking about how it's actually more engagement now than there used to be. I don't know about money, but I do know about engagement. But I would like to see them sort of subtly shift this thing. I don't think he should go in and blow it up and create Fox News number two or something like that.
No.
I would like to see him just behind the scenes. Okay, maybe we just have a new news director who just focuses on news. That's it. And maybe just that. And just see what happens.
I think what he should do with it, say he buys it, I think what you do with it is you follow the Fox model in the sense that you've got shows that are news shows, and then in the evening you got shows that are opinion shows. And really, if I know Elon Musk, because I don't know how much your X feed has changed since he took over, but I see as many liberals in my main page, my For You page, as I do conservatives. It's a lot more balanced of a feed, and I see a lot of liberals complaining about that, and the reason they're complaining about that is when you're used to preferential treatment, equal treatment looks like oppression.
Sure.
So they're seeing more conservatives. It's like, listen, the flip side is happening to me. I'm seeing yours, and I'm a conservative. So I think what he does then is in those evening shows, you do that mix. You get that balance in there. You can have a Rachel Maddow alongside of Joe Rogan. You put a Joe Rogan type person on there or something like that. You'll have a conservative and you'll also have a liberal, and mm-hmm. you just let it do its thing. And those people that are going to run, they're going to run as soon as he buys it. The liberals are going to bail as soon as he buys it. There will be voyeuristic watching. People will come in to watch the MSNBC meltdown, you know, if he just leaves it alone, and you'll get a bunch of eyes on it like that. But that's not going to be lasting power.
I want to float an alternative idea. Because let's assume something here for this discussion. Let's assume, for purposes of this discussion, that Comcast wants $5 billion for MSNBC. What would happen if Musk did this? Had his team of lawyers go in and sign a revocable memorandum of understanding to purchase MSNBC for $5 billion. Revocable is the key part, because you don't want it to be bound as a contract. But you enter into this memorandum of understanding saying, I would like to talk to you about buying MSNBC, and then leak that information to the press. Once that happens, then all of the progressives that are watching MSNBC now would flee in droves. You revoke the memorandum of understanding after a month of letting it get a lot of press. And then when MSNBC has literally, because I've often said for years that MSNBC is used by the witness protection program, because if you put somebody on the air at MSNBC, they're never going to be found, right? But if you leak out a memorandum of understanding, an MOU that says Musk's going to buy it, everybody flees. Their viewership craters. Now you pick up what was going to cost $5 billion. You pick it up for a song because they've got no advertisers, no viewers, no eyeballs. And then you can further increase your ability to make money on it by purchasing it for a fraction of the price.
Wouldn't a memorandum of understanding be ex post facto, though? I mean, I hate to get really legal on this.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But when I heard you say that, I was like, kind of red flag.
And what does ex post facto, Mr. Ryan Wiggins, mm-hmm. Esquire, what does ex post facto even mean?
After the fact.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how on earth would that apply to this situation?
Well, I don't want to get it. This would get boring if we got too deep into it. But it was just something that I felt like, as a legal mind, somebody out there's thinking, I was like, I better say it.
Brad Range, he's going to say E pluribus unum any minute now, right?
He's going through his folder of Latins, like, what did I learn here?
I mean, look, let's just put that aside for a second. E equals MC squared.
Modus operandi.
Modus operandi. And by the power of the scriptures, sola scriptura. But... I don't even know if that's Latin.
I don't think it is. Well, I got to tell you, there's a friend of mine who's a plaintiff's attorney who sent on her email. I'm not going to drop her name, but I got a lot of cases with her. And she has some Latin phrase in her signature block that means something to the effect of, fight and don't let them wear you down. It's a Latin phrase. And it always bugs me. So when I responded to her this week, and there was like five different attorneys on this email chain, last week rather, on Friday, I responded, I went and I found a Latin phrase, and I put it in my signature block just to see if anybody would pick it up. And the Latin phrase was, it was real long, but and I wish I had it in front of me, I'd read it. But it means employees must wash their hands after using the restroom. And I put it in there just to see if someone would pick up on it. Uh-huh. And oh, everybody did. They were like, oh, what? Brad's putting Latin in his signature block now. Yeah, it just means employees have to wash their hands after using the restroom.
I thought it sounded cool.
I got a tattoo on my lower back that I was told when I got it, it meant don't mess with me, like MMA fighter kind of like font.
Yeah, sure.
It says non manducare canum sibum.
And, no idea.
But then when I looked it up in one of those apps that you can kind of like do in the mirror and it'll show you, it'll translate for you, it means in Latin non manducare canum sibum. Means won't eat dog food. Isn't that craziest
wow.
thing?
Well, then why on earth would you put a tattoo when it violates what you're actually doing, which is eating dog food?
No, I didn't. I would put it in my mouth, spit it right back out.
Oh.
It's an MO.
He's like,
it's a modus operandi.
But I didn't swallow it.
Right.
Is well, modus there's operandi. A Bill Clinton answer.
Exactly.
I didn't inhale.
And since we're talking legally, is modus operandi Latin?
Yes.
Yes,
it is.
Yes.
Yes, that was mine.
Ah.
he's going to go with E pluribus unum next. That's yeah. Then he's going to
yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, in total, I think that your reasoning for Elon Musk buying MSNBC is just a little shaky.
Okay. Well, I think
from
it's
one
a good
legal
idea.
Mind to another.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. From one legal mind to another. Speaking of legal minds, Jack Smith. Breaking news today that Jack Smith has announced that he is filing a dismissal of the January 6th charges against President Trump in Washington, D.C. So, but what I want to use that, because I think that speaks for itself, but the question becomes, when you look at the New York case, with Judge Mershon, he is still taking it under advisement. The Alvin Bragg administration there in New York has said they want him to delay prosecution until 2029. And right now, Judge Mershon has said there was a November 26 sentencing date. That's been pulled, but Mershon has said he will make a decision before Trump takes office. How should Judge Mershon proceed with regard to those 34 felony counts that Trump was convicted on under New York law?
So just for clarification, really, he's going to clarify that he's going to rule on it soon? Or he's going to clarify that he still could delay it till 2029.
Yeah, he hasn't made a decision yet.
He's just saying, I don't know.
He's saying right now, I'm thinking about it.
Okay, so he's not saying anything about anything. He's just saying it's all still up in the air.
He asked, Judge Mershon asked Alvin Bragg to brief this issue about what the judge should do, because it is a unique circumstance.
I'll say.
Never in the history of American politics has this come up. So he asked Bragg what they should do. He also asked the Trump team. They said dismiss the charges because of the Supreme Court's decision about presidential immunity combined with the fact that you, under federal and state law, you can't maintain an ongoing criminal action against a sitting president. When you put those two issues together or two rules together, how should Mershon proceed? And Bragg said delay it until 2029 and then proceed with the prosecution. So the issue is, how should Judge Mershon proceed with that issue?
Gosh. There are so many, because exactly what you said, here's why. I don't think anything's going to happen to Trump. I don't think they're going to come back in 2029 and prosecute him, although they could. If they say, yeah, we'll maybe do that. It could happen. But the reason I think this is such an important case still is exactly what you said. The precedent that it's setting for all future lawfare that you could use against your political enemies.
Anyone.
or anybody for that. Political enemies, not just being people in office, but political enemies of any stripe. So this is still a very important case, in my opinion, because of the ramifications of what it's setting for the future.
Yes.
But I don't know what that means. I'm observing it with intense scrutiny and interest, but I don't really know what I'm looking for. Which is why I like talking to people like you, and we're going to talk to Hans von Spakovsky on Wednesday, probably about that issue, is what should we want out of this?
Well, here, let me identify, and you can certainly bring this up with Hans, but here's my biggest concern, taking politics out of it, is the following. Procedurally, you cannot appeal a decision until there is a final judgment. Final judgment doesn't occur until there is sentencing. So, therefore, right now, if the sentencing is delayed until 2029, the question becomes, is that yes or no a final judgment? If it's not, which I don't think it would be,
right?
Because you can't have the final judgment until that sentencing occurs, and if it's put off for 4 years, you're delaying it. You're then robbing President Trump of the ability to file an appeal. Mm-hmm. Now, that decision, that case for Judge Michonne was one of the most error-filled cases, civil or criminal, I've ever seen, heard about, or read about in my career. It was error-filled from the beginning to the end. Not the least of which, it was error-filled because it attempted to create a zombie statute, because we all know there are statute limitations. And the federal statute that said this is a crime by not reporting these funds that were paid to Stormy Daniels, the statute limitations expired because the Obama administration chose not to prosecute Trump for that. So the statute had expired, and yet under the state law of New York, they in essence resurrected in a zombie-like fashion as a federal criminal law that had already expired under the statute of limitations. That type of bootstrapping has never been done anywhere in the history of this country. So we don't know how that would work on appeal. Furthermore, allowing Stormy Daniels to testify in of itself was irrelevant to the entire proceeding. What she said had nothing to do with the fact that she was paid, and Trump had agreed and stipulated that she was paid the money. So her testimony was wholly irrelevant. And in the Harvey Weinstein cases, even the state of New York earlier this year reversed multiple convictions against Harvey Weinstein because the judge let in repetitive, cumulative, and embarrassing evidence that wasn't relevant. Well, that's exactly what Stormy Daniels was. So when you put all that in a blender, here's the point I'm trying to make. By delaying the sentencing, you're robbing President Trump of the right to appeal a decision against him. And you want to talk about denying a person's due process rights? Now you're saying, we're not going to allow you to appeal a decision that any first-year law student can figure out should be reversed. But you're delaying that. So you're giving the impression of guilt on 34 felony counts for an additional 4 years when anyone else in this country could challenge that on appeal and have those convictions overturned.
Isn't that itself a dangerous precedent to set?
Yes.
Because you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's never been done.
No.
Where somebody is just waiting for sentencing indefinitely. That you can't do that.
That to me is a crime, because you're preventing someone from saying, I have the legal right to challenge that conviction. And by denying that for 4 years, you're robbing me, you're denying me with unjust cause the right to have this conviction against me overturned. That in of itself should be a crime.
So they're creating a new type of lawfare if they do it.
Yes.
That you could do this to other people then, yes, who aren't the president of the United States, and say, yeah, we're just going to hold this right here and in this kind of
in abeyance,
neither way state, and just hold it, because now we can kind of do whatever we want to you while you wait for no appeal. I mean,
if you stop and you think about that, you still have to have your legal team on standby ready to go to appeal should the conviction come down, and then you're ready to proceed with the appeal. And if you are not a person of means, that puts an undue financial burden on you. You're just sitting there waiting for whatever to happen. In the same ilk, whenever you're talking about a political enemy. What is the thing that they wanted out of this, and what is the thing that they championed out of this? They called Donald Trump a convicted felon. Now, I know when you look at the law, he's not a convicted felon until the sentencing is put in there.
And the appeals are out.
But that doesn't stop people from calling him that. So you can just absolutely besmirch somebody's reputation by doing this, because you know this case will get overturned.
Right. So I would like Judge Merchan to wrap this up here. I would like Judge Merchan to do two things in this order. Number one, dismiss the charges, because the evidence that was used against Donald Trump in the criminal case was gained in part based upon things that he did and discussed as president, covered by the immunity decision from the Supreme Court last summer, therefore is invalid and should be overturned. Secondly, if Merchan won't do that for whatever reason, political, legal, whatever, if he refuses to dismiss the charges, then I think Merchan should sentence Donald Trump to 4 years of community service as president of the United States and say that that's community service and that's going to fulfill it. And then once that sentence is given, Trump can appeal that up to the Court of Appeals and then have all 34 of those convictions overturned on appeal. That's what should happen. If anything other than those two things happen, then we know that it's wholly and exclusively a political decision to continue to tar and feather Donald Trump. Hey, we got to take a break here. We're going to be back with more analysis, more news of the day, more fun and frivolity, as you have come to expect from the Annie Fry Show. Brad Young sitting in, 97.1 FM Talk. Guys, I want to see if you caught this story. We were talking about Chicago earlier in the segment, right? And obviously, a fabulously, he's so well-loved by the people of Chicago, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson. And of course, I'm being facetious when I say that. He has proposed an increase of 35% of taxes, wholesale taxes, mind you, on the cost of beer and liquor in the city of Chicago.
What's the percent again?
35%.
Wow.
And so, and this is the wholesale tax. So when you go to Chicago, and if you go and have an adult beverage, you're actually being taxed twice on that adult beverage. Number one, the wholesaler is being taxed when they buy it. And then when the retailer sells it, they're taxing the consumer. So that's why if you get a drink in Chicago, it's outrageously expensive because it's being double taxed. Now, though, even though it's already double taxed, Brandon Johnson wants to increase it by 35%. This is what Mayor Johnson said, quote, "Our budget reflects the commitment to invest in our people and neighborhoods, ensuring that every Chicagoan has the opportunity to thrive," unquote. Well, first of all, I don't even know what that means. That's like a word salad. It sounds nice.
It sounds very nice.
But it doesn't mean anything. Secondly, if you compare it, like, for example, the tax, the wholesale, we're just talking wholesale. The wholesale tax on a gallon of distilled spirits in Illinois is currently over $8, but in Chicago, it's $14. And in comparison, in Wisconsin, it's $3, and it's less than $3 in Indiana. So you would think if you were living in Chicago, wouldn't by definition you feel the need to drink more? And so this would be a triple taxation, because if you're living under Mayor Johnson, you're going to want to start consuming more adult beverages, not less.
It's just unfortunate as an Illinois resident, not that that Chicago tax would directly affect us, but these are small businesses that affects.
It kind of reveals the mindset.
Yeah, and you know, whether you're serving hard alcohol or just, you know, you're serving beers, that kind of stuff, it just kills you. And everything that Illinois does as a state, let alone what then the city's going to put on top of that, It just kills people from wanting to invest and open businesses. And restaurants are one of the main small businesses that people open. They're hard to keep open. That's why you see so many of them come and go.
They're very hard.
And when you're in a place like Chicago, you hear these kinds of things and you go, I'm not going to invest in making an already difficult to achieve business anyway into Chicago or into Illinois at large, because the taxes, like you just said, with neighboring states, it's so much higher to just come in and try to do a very basic business.
I look at this and I'm like, what is it that he needs the extra money for? Because this follows up on the, what was it, a $300 million increase on property taxes in Chicago that, I mean, his own city council or whatever voted 50-0 to strike down. They, no, we're not doing that. What does he want to use all this money for? And whenever you read something like that lovely word salad that you read, it's a whole lot of nothing. He won't tell you what he's going to spend it on. And I said this to you off air, Brad, but he was a member. He was a Chicago teacher. He was a member of the Chicago Teachers Union. He got elected based largely on the amount of funds that they invested in him. And I can't confirm this, so this is speculation, but I cannot help but think that he's going to try to redirect all these tax funds back into that teachers union, kind of a you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours situation. And the problem with the Chicago Teachers Union is they don't need that much money. They don't. And they're just begging for it more. I think they're already talking about a strike.
Well, I will tell you that your disclaimer there, that was a View-worthy legal disclaimer right there. I mean, that could have been done on The View.
Well, if you do it up front, then you don't have to go back and, Brad, would you like to do a legal note?
But here's what gets me. Years ago, I represented TLBA. And when I was representing them, doing legal work for them, I had to go over to Kansas City quite a bit because their main management was in Kansas City, even though their largest hub was in St. Louis.
TWA is Trans, right?
Trans World Airlines. Yep. No longer, they bought out by American Airlines. So when I went over there, I'd get on a flight, and there'd be like 10 people on a 737. I would be one of them. And I'd have a whole row to myself. I'd have a whole section to myself because nobody was on the flight. Because it was $600 to fly to Kansas City. Then, and that was, they were losing money right and left on that. Then Southwest Airlines comes in. They priced them at $99 from St. Louis to Kansas City. Mm-hmm. TWA had to meet that price, $99. Then when I went to Kansas City, the plane was packed. And I was asking the people, because for $99, people were saying, hey, let's go to Kansas City. And Kansas City was saying, hey, let's come to St. Louis. And so when I talked to the management at TWA, they said, by dropping the price from $500 or $600 a ticket to $99, that flight route from Kansas City to St. Louis went from being their most money-losing flight in the country to their most profitable by lowering the price to $99. So what do we learn from that? That by lowering the price, you encourage more people to consume the goods and services, thereby increasing the opportunity to collect a tax because of the massive increase of the use of those goods or services. If you look at Chicago, by raising the taxes on the drinks, you're going to, Brian, like you said, there's going to be fewer companies that can afford a liquor license. There's going to be fewer companies selling drinks, fewer mom and pop operations that can sell wine or drinks of beer or whatever. And so by doing that, by raising the tax, they're actually going to decrease the amount of money collected, thereby hurting their own constituents. The way to do this would be to drop the tax and say, come to Chicago, we make you want a drink. That should be their that should be their phrase, right?
Yeah, it's the whole
state.
And
make fun of it.
Yeah.
Make fun of it, right? People come there, drop the tax, and then because you would incredibly increase the amount of product sold, it would therefore create an actual increase in net revenue that would then benefit your citizens. But nobody thinks that way.
Well,
certainly not the left.
Conservative states do think that
way. Yes, they do.
How do we get rid of as much regulation as possible? How do we get the government out of your way?
How do we get businesses here?
How do we get people to move
no
here?
No income tax.
Right. Yeah. I know. Yeah. But the progressives in particular and liberals in general can't understand simple economics 101. And to me, it's baffling. Brandon, if you want to help, and there's a reason why I think his name is Brandon. Brandon, if you want to help the citizens of Chicago, reduce the tax. Don't increase it. But liberal has never seen a tax that they want to cut. Never. Hey, we got to take another break here because we went long on the prior segment. Stick around. We've got the final segment coming up here, and we're going to continue this discussion of Illinois coming up next on the Annie Fry Show. Stick around. Hey, we're rolling into the last segment here on the Annie Fry Show. And during the break, though, Mr. Wiggins, you mentioned you've got an announcement.
Well, yeah, I've got a book coming out tomorrow. But
that's great.
The announcement, that's not what I was talking about, though.
He fooled you.
Bait and switch. It's called The Grocery List. I'm doing a sleep study tonight. And I just found out right before the show, they called me. They're like, can you come in tonight? I'm like, man, that's super short notice. But yeah. I can't. So I've never done this before. I've had one of those mouth guards for a long time.
Yep.
And I talked about my dentist, Dr. Ty Parker, and how he fits you with these things. Well, I've been fine with that forever, and I probably still will be, but I just want to have a backup CPAP just in case it ever gets to the point where I'm like, man, the mouth guard's not working anymore, because mouth guard's usually for milder sleep apnea, and the CPAP's for more extreme. And I'm probably still in the mild, but I want to get ahead of it. And they just called me, and I'm like, oh, man, what is this going to be like? Because I'm hosting tomorrow.
Yeah.
And me and Brad.
This will be fun.
Yeah. And so I don't know, do you get sleep in these things?
Well,
or
I had to do it. I've got sleep apnea. I've got bad sleep apnea, so I use a CPAP. But whenever I did the sleep study, somebody asked me the next day, what was it like? And I said, well, it's like sleeping in a Russian motel room where you know you're being videoed. Okay. So,
and that's the part of the conversation that I walked in on. I didn't hear anything else, so I was very like, what are we talking about right now?
Mm-hmm. Because they showed me the video afterwards, and it's also you're mic'd. So it's mic'd and videoed, and you're sleeping in this nondescript room. So it's very much like a motel room, except, I know I'm being videoed and the mic is on.
What if you have, real bad gas or something?
Well,
the mic's
going to
pick that up.
The doctor's going to prescribe sleep assistance on one end and a cork in the other.
Is there really a doctor sitting there watching you the whole time?
Nobody's watching you.
They just
record it and then watch it later.
Oh, really?
So there's nobody standing there watching you.
Do they hook you up to different things to monitor? Yeah.
Correct. You have to. You'll be wearing.
Open up the trap doors.
There's a loudspeaker in there when you fart. It's like someone just goes.
Somebody's laughing.
Starts laughing.
Ha 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 ha.
And you also be wearing.
I don't know why the doctor's
monitor.
German. But he is.
From all Russian good to Russian German.
Doctors are German.
Make up your mind.
Yeah. Evil doctors are always German or Russian. So you'll also have a heart monitor that you'll be wearing, which is about the size of a coaster. They'll just go on your chest, and then that's it.
Huh? Can you use it as a coaster?
It would be an expensive coaster. It would also be oblong and kind of round. And so
lay there with a drink on your chest. Well, at least it's not going to leave a ring.
Right. Well,
on your chest.
Yeah.
So Ethan's never been fat.
It gets back to the Russian motel analogy about drinks, I guess. But no, so that'll be it, and then it'll just test how you're sleeping.
So apparently, I got to go in there at 8 o'clock tonight. And then I hope there's something to do. Hopefully I can bring a laptop or something.
You sit and you stare at Steely.
You will go to sleep. Do it now.
He's Russian.
I know. But I got to wake up in the morning and come directly here to do my Mark Cox morning show hit. And then I'm here for the rest of the day doing hosting.
You're going to shower at least, right?
I don't know.
Bring some clothes.
Hey, there's one upstairs.
I'm glad I'm not going to be here tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm stuck in the room with him.
Yeah.
Sealed, too.
Ugh.
So that's happening tonight, and I have no idea what to expect. I was picturing more of a lab, but you describe it like it's just a hotel room.
No, it's just a nondescript room, and there's a bed and sheets and then you sleep. But then they showed me the video when I came back in for my consultation, and I was like, wow, I'm glad my wife didn't visit me or something. It was kind of creepy to see that. It's like you've seen in a James Bond movie where they've got the video of the room.
As long as they tell me where the camera is, I'll play to it the whole night.
Right in the middle of the night, he's standing in the corner staring at the corner.
I'll wear one of those long wigs, from The Ring, and I'll just stand in the corner and shake the whole night.
Ryan, why are you popping your butt out at the camera, Ryan? What are you doing?
The actor's like, why did you wear a long wig? I don't know.
Because my name is Wiggins.
Thought you'd get a kick out of it.
It's on the walls.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I don't have anywhere else
well,
to go.
Good luck
with that,
Ryan.
Yeah, thank you.
And I don't know how we come back from that.
I don't either.
Today's YouTube live chat poll.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Today's YouTube live chat poll. What are the results of that, Ryan?
Well, actually, Ethan reads the
Ethan's
results.
Got it.
But the results are with Ethan.
There you go.
But we haven't given our opinions on it yet.
What do you think, Ryan?
They have given me pause, but I've kind of researched it and got through it. So I'm still kind of a no on this overall, because once I've looked into these people, you know, the Surgeon General was a little bit weird, but I was talking to Mark Cox this morning, and he's like, look, the Surgeon General doesn't really do that much. And if the head of the Health and Human Services is RFK, then the Surgeon General is not just going to act independently of whoever's in charge of it. So I'm not really that worried about it.
The only one that gave me any pause was Matt Gaetz, because when I first heard his name, I was kind of like, what? But he has since stepped down, and I'm very confident in all the other picks, so I'm a no on this one.
I am very excited that Matt Gaetz stepped down for consideration, because I had concerns with him. And the new pick to replace him at AG is Pam Bondi, and I think she is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any problems there. But I do have a concern with the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard. Not because of some alleged connection to Syria or being a Russian agent. I don't believe any of that. But my concern is this. Usually the Director of National Intelligence has a national security background, and she does not. And she served in the military, but that in of itself is not a background that I would like to see in the DNI. So do I have problems that she would somehow use it to convey information to the Russians? Not at all. I don't have any concerns about that. But I do think that in order to effectively manage the national intelligence apparatus, which is sprawling, it's immense, that simply having a background in the military and a brief stint in Congress, and she didn't serve on any committees that were intelligent-oriented, which anyone could say nothing in Congress is intelligent-oriented, right? But having said that, I just don't think she has the background for the job. I don't have a problem with her, but she doesn't have the background for the job.
Wouldn't that same criticism apply to Pete Hegseth?
Somewhat. Now, he does have, obviously he has a history in the military, and he served in the military, but I think his involvement with military service since he got out was something. But Tulsa or Gabbard doesn't have any relationship or involvement in any intelligence services. So I think that is not as detrimental to Hegseth as it would be to Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah, I think that what you're pointing out there, I think that might be one of the things that makes her such an attractive option to the Trump administration, because she isn't affected by that. She's not quote unquote part of the club. And if they're looking to go in and change the club and break the cycle, they see somebody as an outsider going in might be a good one.
I think that's exactly why that they picked her. That though, to me, has some concern. It really does. Does that, and when you look at the fact that how was it, 72 supposed national security experts certified that the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian propaganda, which we know now it was not. Mm-hmm. The FBI certified in Hunter Biden's trial that it was not propaganda and that it was his. And you look at those 72 and you say, these people are politically motivated. Mm-hmm. So I see your point, mm-hmm. Mr. Range, that you really want someone that's not tainted by that. But finding those in the national intelligence community that are tainted is only part of the job of the director. The other part is to manage and oversee a global intelligence operation, which I think could be somewhat hampered by having no experience.
Is there somewhere else you would have preferred her be on the cabinet where you think she could have been more effective, or just not in the cabinet at all?
No, I would be happy with her in the cabinet somewhere else, just not in charge of our national security apparatus, because that's critical.
One area we haven't talked about is the IRS, what's going to happen at the IRS. And I'll tell you what, the couple of guys who came out and were whistleblowers against the Bidens, I'd say put those guys in charge, because mm-hmm. they were willing to go against it in the midst of it.
Yes.
And they're not even Republicans. I don't even care. They were people who just said, look, this is wrong. The way the current leadership is running this thing is wrong. It's favoritism. It's government cronyism. And we want no part of it.
Yeah.
Put those guys in charge of it.
Yeah, we need someone in there who knows, particularly in the IRS, who knows that we can't use politics as a basis for tax policy. I mean, we famously, under the Obama administration, if you registered a corporation, a not-for-profit, and had the word Patriot in the name, you were automatically flagged for an audit. Automatically flagged for an audit.
Yeah.
Okay, that's wrong. And it would be just as wrong as if you had it just because an organization has Black Lives Matter in the name, we're going to do a tax audit. That would be equally wrong. We don't want the IRS to be politicized one way or the other. But in order to get to that goal, we have to root out those within the IRS who do have a political axe to grind.
However, the Black Lives Matter organizations were misusing money almost all the time.
That's
so
true.
That, but you know, is an issue.
And they should be investigated and prosecuted by the Department of Justice, but you don't punish the taxpayers who are donating because at that point, the organization needs to be convicted. You don't just label them for an audit based upon the name and their group.
Right.
That, to me, is wrong. So, but we do have Mike Elam coming up here.
Results of the poll?
Oh,
let's
yeah.
Do
Results
it.
Results of the poll.
205 votes today for the YouTube live chat poll. Do any of Trump's picks give you pause? P-A-U-S-C, not P-A-W-S.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you clarified that.
69% say no. 31% say yes. That is today's YouTube live chat poll.
Cool.
Very good.
Thanks.
Hey, I love it when I get to hang out with the cool kids here, and we had the Manny Fry show today, so thanks for letting me hang out here on 97.1 FM Talk. We've got Mike Elam sitting in, I believe, next 3 hours for Mark Reardon, so you're going to want to stick around for that. And this, as you know, is the home of conservative talk, 97.1 FM.